Boker Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf hey. We're holding on the very last line of daf Dalet Amud Bet. Tana Rabban, Dinei Bamanot B'Shlosha. So getting back to the mission, we said that we need Shlosha Dayanim, and we made a distinction between Halvaot on the one hand, Havaot and Hodaot, as we called them, and on the other hand, between what we called Dinei Momonos, where the Torah was actually Makpid, that was the Parsha of the Shemrim, we called that Gizelot, as we talked about Turntine as a God of, and so on, and Chavalot. But here we're saying, it's true that you need three, but Imaya Mumche L'Rabim Dan Afilu Yechidi. So where we're talking about someone who has a lot of experience, and he is actually well known to be a dayan that is a mumcha. Mumcha doesn't mean he's so mochir. It means that he's very expert. He's seen an awful lot of cases. He's not going to make a mistake. And therefore, if we're talking about the dinim of hodaot v'halvaot, which we don't need smuchim, so then what we're adding is that basically we saw before that Alibi de Rav Acha b'Rei de Rav Ika, the halacha is that minatera, there is no Eruv Parshas. That's the way the Rashi learned it before. And if there's no Eruv Parshas, then we don't have any D'oraisa din that we need mumchim by atman, rather smuchim by hodaot v'halvaot. The only thing is that we do need three because of the Rabbanan. They said that we want you to actually have three in order to avoid having somebody who doesn't know what they're doing. But since the Torah said, "Betzedek tishpot amitecha," which means even a yochid really should be able to do it, but because of the problem that we may have yoshvei kronos, so we said, okay, have three people. If you'll have three people, then there's bound to be somebody, even at Washington Square, who knows what they're doing. But if you're talking about an expert, in that case, the Rabbanon, actually, they were never koveya that you have to have three, because if you're going specifically to a dayan mumcha, there's no need for three. And therefore, the din is, betzedek tishpot amitecha, that's the ikar din, even a single judge. Rav Nachman, if we want to talk about somebody who's an expert, just look at me. So kagon ana, someone like me, can be done dinei momonos, and all on my own. Betzedek tishpot amitecha. Reb Chiya said the same thing. Kagon ana dan dinei momonos b'yechide. But the question is, using themselves as a model, Reb Nachman and Reb Chiya using themselves as a model, we need to ask what aspect were they referring to? Iboilo. Do we mean that Reb Nachman and Reb Chiya were saying, if you know as much as I do, so kagon ana de gamirna, so I know all of the dinim, and furthermore, savirna, and you also have an ability to understand it, to analyze it, and to extrapolate from it, and to create new piske halachas, even though you don't have an exact precedent and so on. Is that what you mean, or is there a very important hidden thing? And that is, nakitna reshusa. I also, both of these, as we're going to see, both Reb Nachman and Reb Chiya actually had government authorization. And government authorization, we're going to see that there were two different bases to government authorization. When I say government, I mean political authorization. What's the meaning of political authorization? The fact that the Torah considers Yehuda to be the Mokar, it's Yehuda Mechokaki. So that means that there's something about the nature of Malchus and the nature of power and authority that is what allows and gives the Bezdin their ability to force people to do things that they don't want to do. So whether it's in terms of appearing before the din, or whether it's in terms of taking money shaloket din because of hefker bez din hefker, we need to have that element as well. Is that what Reb Nachman means? And we're going to see that there were two different aspects of this, because the pasuk is merames to two completely different dinim, as we're going to talk about. One of them is the keach of mechokek, which is the ability to pass in a din, and that's Mechokek Mibein Ratvav. And the other one is the other mention of Shevet Miyuhuda. Lo Yasur Shevet Miyuhuda. Shevet is a nice big club to club people over the head. Now, those are two different aspects. And one of them, the Gemara Darshans, the Shevet, is a reference to the political power that was actually granted during the time of the Golas by the authorities in Bavel to the Resh Galusa, and that was called Shevet. And the Resh Galusa had this power to be able to be Mechayev Hefker, Besdin Hefker, and so on. It's very similar to a Melech. And on the other hand, the Mechokek, Mibein Raglav, is a reference to the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael. And that's the question. Does the Rishus of the Nasi, or the Rishus of the Resh Galuta, does that figure in the ability to do pask in the din as well? Or did the Gemara mean over here that according to this pshat, that tzedek tishpot amitecha, and that it's not a halacha d'oraisa, that you need three, you don't really need rishus. And we separate completely between the concept of dinim and the concept of enforcement through political power. Now you can see how this issue touches upon some of the fundamental questions that we raised in the introduction about what precisely is the source and the type of power that's expressed in a Beis Din above and beyond the concept of Aisa Adam Din Liatzmei, and above and beyond the din that every person is mechuyev to be afrushim yisura, to prevent people from doing yisurim. We spoke a lot about the various approaches, but obviously, the fundamental questions we need to work out over here in the Sugya Sanhedrin, then we can see how it applies bismanenu. So that's our question. Do you mean just that you are gamirna visavirna, or do you mean you're gamirna visavirna v'nakitna rishusa? Masha einken avelo nakit rishusa, if you did not have political authorization, then we would not need to abide by any of your decisions. Or perhaps, Odim Havagam de Lunakit Rishusa Dinadai. Tashma, says the Gemara, will bring you a raya. Marzutra, it happened once that Marzutra, who was Renachman's son, he actually judged the case, Dandina, and he made a mistake. And now the question was, in having made that mistake, he cost somebody money. Because he should have really given a psak that would have allowed that individual to recover his money, and now he made a mistake. Now, the question is like this. There are certain mistakes. We'll see later on what level of mistake. There are certain mistakes that cause us to declare it a mistrial, and it's as if there never was a psak. But if it's not one of those fundamental mistakes, which is going to see later on differences between Toa B'Dvar Mishnah versus other types of Tohuyot. If it's not that kind of mistake, then the only way it would be a mistrial is if the Dayan didn't have a right to judge it in the first place. But otherwise, his psak would be binding. And now the question is, if his psak is binding, then he caused damages. And if he caused damages, perhaps he has to pay. Or do we say that the immunity of a judge is part of the rights granted to him if he's given the ability to be done? So in here, the question was that Reb Nachman's son, Reb Marzutra, he made a mistake. So he came to Reb Yosef to find out if he has to pay. So Reb Yosef said to him, well, you're going to have to pay unless the people that had come to you for that din had openly accepted you as a judge, come hell or high water. In other words, they didn't say, look, you know, I mean, we'd like you to judge us, but we're not handing our lives over into your hand. If you made a mistake, we're going to go for an appeals. And, you know, you're going to have to pay. So if they said to you, we accept your judgment, fine. Then you don't have to pay. But if not, you do have to pay. Now, the question is, why would he have to pay? If the halacha was that he did not have authorization, which is clearly the case, because if he had authorization, he certainly wouldn't have had to pay. So since he judged without authorization, if the din is that it's not even considered to be a judgment, and we wouldn't have said that if it was done, dinai din, so then why would he have to pay? Just cancel the whole judgment and start over again with a proper judge, or even with him if he wants to pass him properly this time. So it's clear that what Rabbi Yosef is saying is, look, you're not water because you judged and you had a right to judge, but you were not authorized to judge. So two completely different dinim. In being a right to judge, and therefore you're a mumche l'rabim, your judgment stands. But because of the very fact that your judgment stands, you're in trouble. Because since you weren't authorized politically, now you're going to have to pay for the losses that that guy incurred because of you. Unless, of course, they made a deal that they're accepting you under all circumstances. You decide what you got to do. But anyway, Shmamina, what we do see from here is that even Kilona Kitrashuta, even if you do not have political authorization, Dine Din, if you are a mumcha, and he was a mumcha over here, Rabbi Zera Breir Marzuta Breir Nachman, then the din stands, and the only thing is, you're going to have to pay. Omar Rav, well, I could tell you, if you're going to be going around judging cases because you're an expert, and you want to make certain that you're not caught in a position where you're going to have to pay for losses in the event that you made a mistake, so Hainan Deboila Meidan Dina, and nonetheless, Ita'ah Miboila Miftara, he wants to cover himself and have insurance against a mistake that he makes in the din, then he needs to have immunity as a judge. So how would he gain immunity as a judge? Lishkal Rishuta Mibe Reshkaluta. Once he gets permission from the Resh Galuta, the Resh Galuta has the power of Shevet, and therefore is able to say, Hefker Bezdin Hefker. We allow this individual to judge, and his judgment is binding. And in the event that you're able to appeal his judgment, it turns out he's wrong, doesn't make any difference. Because of the fact that Bezdin has a right to be mafkir if it's coupled with the authority of the Resh Galuta. So that's the best thing to do. Go and get yourself authorization. V'chein Omer Shmuel. You want to be in a position where you have immunity from mistakes, then you have to go and lishko rishuta mi beresh galuta. Now, one thing is for sure, that pshita mehacha lahacha, mehatam lahatam. Let's say that somebody is judging over here, here meaning in Bavel, as we're in the Talmud Bavel, here means. So in other words, if you have a authorization from the resh galuta, and you're utilizing that authorization of the head of the Golos of Bavel to go and to be done in the Golos in Bavel, that certainly is going to grant you immunity. Furthermore, if you're also here in Bavel and you give this Resh Galuta, gives a judge who then judges in Eretz Yisrael a official authorization, called up Rishuso. It's called up Rishuso, which is the technical name. He would be also even allowed to have immunity and to judge in Eretz Yisrael. That's for sure. Why is that? Because here in Bavel, the Lashon that we refer to in the Pasuk of Lo Yosur, Shevet Miyehuda. Shevet Miyehuda, we're going to see later on, is a reference to the Resh Galuta. And the meaning of Shevet is the political power of enforcement. And that is more powerful than the other word in the Pasuk. The other word is Lo Yosur, Shevet Miyehuda, Umechokek Mibein Raglav. A Mechokek is not someone who has political power. A Mechokek is the power of paskening the din. That's the chok. He'll tell you what the chok is. So in Eretz Yisrael, we only call him a mechokek. Okay, so then he's, what would you call him, a member of Congress, so to speak. He's a legislator. But that is less. So if you have the reshus of the Resh Galuta, it's going to work in Eretz Yisrael as well. We see that from the Braita. Lo Yasur Shevet Miyuda. That refers to the Rashi Goluyot Shebibavel. Why are they called Shevet? Because they were given the political power to be Rodinet Yisrael B'Shevet. They take weapons, so to speak, and they enforce. So that is something that for sure is going to be sufficient to give you the authorization to be immune. Mashenke, the end of the pasuk, which says, Mechokek Bibein Raglav, that refers to the entire Hillel and all of the B'nai Bon of Shal Hillel. These were the people that became the Nesiim in Eretz Yisrael, which includes Rabbeinu HaKadosh, and they are the ones that teach, and they're Melamdim Tera B'Rabim, and they are also the ones in charge, but on a lesser level, which is why I want to know. That's what the Braita said, and that's why, let me continue my question. My question is, what about the other way around? How about if a Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, who's the head of the Beit Din, so he's the ultimate Mechokek, and he gives Rishus for someone to be done. Will that help if that individual is done in Bavel or not? Tashma, there was actually a case like this where Rabbi Bar Chana had a mistake in a case that he had tried in Bavel. And he came to Rabbi Chia, and Rabbi Chia was in Eretz Yisrael. He wanted to know whether is he going to have to pay or not. And Rabbi Chia said to Rabbi Bar Chana, "I kablucha layu lo tishalen." He said the same psak, but here it was in reference to his din in Bavel, according to Rabbi Chia. So, iki blucha layu lo tishalein. If they accepted any judgment that you have, and that was part of the deal when they came to you for a judgment, then you don't have to pay. But otherwise, you do have to pay. Now, we know for a fact that Rabbi Bar Chana, who had made this mistake in Bavel, did not have rishus from the Reish Galuta, but he did have rishus from the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael. And Rabbi Bar Chana, rishut ha'vinakit. Nonetheless, what did Rabbi Chia tell him? You're going to have to pay, unless, of course, they accepted you. Well, why would I have to pay? I am a mumche, and I have rishus from the Nasi. Because you don't have rishus from the Reish Galuta. That's the point. And since your judgment was executed in Bavel, the rishus of the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael does not give you immunity if you make a mistake as a judge in Bavel. So you see very clearly, Shmami Namiyata Mahachalamani, that a rishus from the Nasi of Eretz Yisrael does not help when it comes to Bavel. Shmami, no, this actually is a clear riot. The problem is that we know that there was a very important discussion about the issues, and it sure seemed the other way around. Veloma Hani, you're telling me that a Nazi in Eretz Yisrael does not help to grant you immunity in Bavel? What about this argument between Rabbi Bar Avuna? Whenever they got into arguments, he always had arguments with the Reish Galusa. We have a lot of places in the Gemara because the Reish Galusa was not always a very good guy and often had people there that were completely unreliable. He had a lot of people working for him that were lo mahani, as the Gemara puts it, were not good people. They used to get into questions all the time. They would argue with him, and he would say to them, "Listen here, you idiots. I am not a functioning judge because of you jerks. I am Nakit Rishus from my Abba Mori. I got my Rishus from my master, my father. My father got from Rav. Rav was given Rishus from Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia was given Rishus from Rebbe. And that's the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael. And don't give me this bubble garbage." So, I mean, apparently, he was telling them that he's in a better position than they are when it comes to authority, and they better shut up. Yeah, but not a word of it was true. He was telling them that. He was trying to scare them. But the bottom line is, it was all a bunch of fluff. So, b'milta d'alma hu d'ukim lo, he just was trying to shut them up with just, you know, words, but it wasn't true. Wait, so I didn't understand. If it really wasn't true, And you're right in saying that it doesn't help to get a rishus from the Nasi of Eretz Yisrael to go to Bavel. So why the heck did Rabbi Bar Chana Bedavka go out of his way? We're going to see. Before he went to Bavel, he wanted to get rishus from the Nasi. What was the point of his getting rishus from the Nasi? If it's not going to give him immunity, he's going to anyway have to go to these bums in the Reish Galusa and get rishus from them, which clearly that wasn't what he wanted to do. But what did he think he was achieving? So if it can be Akhtar Lamahani, why did he go, as we're going to talk about, why did he go to take rishus from the Nasi? That was because the rishus of the Nasi works for cities on the border. So la'ayarot ha'omdim al ha'gvulin, because those cities, even though technically they're in the area of Bavel, but they kept them in Hagim of Eretz Yisrael, and they felt themselves to be part of the Kehillah of Eretz Yisrael. So over there, for sure, the rishus of the Nasi would help. But the truth is, once he went past that area and he traveled deeply into Bavel, it wasn't going to help. Okay, well, can you tell us the story? My rishus, like, well, what are you referring to? I'm not familiar with the details. Well, it's like this. When Rabbi Bar Chana was heading down to Bavel from Eretz Yisrael, so Rabbi Chia, he wanted to use a little bit of protection, and at that time Rabbi was the Nasi, and Rabbi didn't know Rabbi Bar Chana personally, so Rabbi Chia went to Rabbi and he said, you know, my nephew, my brother's son, is going down to Bavel, Rabbi Bar Chana, and I want to know whether Yore, now this is the Lashon that we use today in what we pretend is Smicha because of this Gemara. Can he be Yore? And Rabbi said to him, yes, Yore. And then Rabbi Chia said, can he be Yadin? Yes, he can be Yadin. Meaning he can even deal with cases of paskening dine mominus, not just treif chickens. And is he able to be matir b'chorot? Can he also say if a b'chor is considered to have a mum, and therefore it would be mutter to eat? Yes, yatir, said Rebbe. Now this is the Lashon, this is what's called yore yore. It's not yore yore, it's yore yore. It's not yadin yadin, it's yadin yadin. It's not yatir b'chorot yatir, it's yatir b'chorot yatir. So it's taken... The Lashon of the Smicha is taken from this Gemara. So when people tell you they've got Yore Yore, you know they're not Amoritz. They don't have Yore Yore. Anyway, so that was the Lashon. Now, interestingly, there was another Maisa when Rav, who was much more knowledgeable and famous than Rabbi Bar Chana, and when Rav was going to Bavel, so Rabbi Chia also asked permission from Rebbe for Rav. And he said, you know, my sister's son, my nephew. Now, it's interesting because Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, he said, is my brother's son. And Rav, he said, is my sister's son. But the funny thing is, they all, as we're going to see, they all seem to have had the same relationship. So we'll get to that in a moment. Because you know the crazy story about Chana and Ivo and how they were, you know, they were, ended up all marrying each other. We'll talk about the case. But anyway, so when he was introducing Rav, what Rabbi Chia said to Rabbi is, well, this time it's my sister's son going down to Bavel. Yore? Yes, Yore. Yadin? Yes, Yadin. Yatir b'chorot? No. Whoa. Okay. So al yatir. No, I'm not giving him the right to be matir b'chorot. Okay, so before we get to that curious situation, why in the world wouldn't he give Rav the right to be Matir B'chorot? I mean, Rav was famous for his Piskei Halachas. All right, that we'll talk about in a moment. But I don't understand why you call one of them your nephew from your brother, and the other one you call your nephew from your sister. I mean, why is that? Why call Rav your nephew from your sister? Well, I mean, maybe because that's what was the truth. One was his sister's son, and one was his brother's son. That would nicely explain why he calls one his sister's son, and one he calls his brother's son. What kind of weird question is that? Why? No, because that's not the case. That's why I'm asking. So if he came, don't try to tell me because that's the way it was. This is not the way it was. Because we know that we have a whole Kabbalah of the Yichus of Rav and so on, that actually Rav's father, who was called Ivo, and Rabbi Bar Chana's father, who was called Chana, so this Ivo and this Chana, together with Rabbi Chia, together with two other people, which were Shela and Marta, all of these were children of the same person. So they were all children of Abba Bar Acha Karsila from the town of Kafri. So then that means that Rabba and Rav were both sons of Rabchia's brothers. It's a befair, Shchana and Iva. So if they were both his brothers, why did he call one of them his sister's son and the other one he called his brother's son? That's because you're not familiar with the complexities over here. You see, this Abba that we were talking about over here, who was the father of all of these people, and he's the one that we're saying was the one that was had all of these children, but he had lost his wife. So he had a son from his first wife, and that son was Ivo. Now, when he married again, he married a woman who had a daughter. Now, what happened was that that means that Ivo was completely unrelated to that daughter. She had been born to another man and to another mother. He had been born to the first mother and to this father, right? Which means that they could actually, the children of Abba Bar Acha Karsela were not going to be related to the people that had been children from the first marriage of his second wife. And in fact, what happened is that Reb Chiya, who was a son, of course, of Reb Abba Bar Acha, he actually was born from the second wife. But then what happened is that Ivo, who to him was related from the same father, married that woman, and she was only a half-sister to Rabbi Chiya and were not related to each other at all. One had been born to a different father and a different mother. Each one had a different father and different mother. They happened to have been in the same family when he took his second wife. Rav was their child. But after they married each other, I told you I had this happen in my family. It's very confusing. But, you know, as kids, we can never understand what was going on. But anyway, so what turns out is that Rav, because of that, was just as much a son of Reb Chiya's brother, it was a half-brother, as he was a son of his sister, it was a half-sister. So why in the world would you refer to him specifically in a different way? So it's not true that one was the son of a sister, one a sister or brother. You could have said either way. So the point over here was that since, however, Rav was actually Rabba Bar Bachana was not the same as Rav, because Rav was both. He was the son of Reb Chiya's brother, meaning his half-brother, and he was the son of his sister, meaning his half-sister. And the half-brother and half-sister were married to each other. Mashenkin Rabba Bar Bachana, who was the son of Reb Chiya's brother, but he wasn't the son of Reb Chiya's sister. So because of that, Reb Chiya said, he's the son of my brother. Okay. But the other explanation, which makes more sense, why would he specify the son of the sister, other than, of course, Gavi's own point on Erev Shabbos, in which I want to stress the Besarenu, so I'm saying this is even a child of my sister. I mean, that's like super duper. That was Gavi's pshat. But the second pshat in the Gemara is Viboyesema. When people have a lot of chokmah, we refer to them as the children of my sister. Why? Because Chochmah is your sister. Dichtiv emor lo Chochmah achoti yahatzor. You're supposed to call Chochmah your sister. Anyway, then I was curious. Like, Reb Chiya asked Rebbe, Yatir b'chorot, the Rebbe says no. I think, wow, okay, why? That was a shock. We were certainly expecting, you know, Yeah. If you're telling me, you know, you're a yadin, yati bechoros, you figure it's a rubber stamp, and all of a sudden, Rebbe says, nope, it can't be mati bechoros. Why the heck not? My time. Is it because Rav was not a big enough Talmud Chacham to be mati bechoros? I mean, we know from all over, we just said that we're calling him the Al-Shem Chochmose, Amar L'Chochma Achoti, and in that context, you're saying, no, he's not smart enough to be mine. That doesn't make sense. That can't be the answer. So what's the answer? Are you going to tell me it's because, look, he might be very smart, but in order for you to be able to be paskening Bechorot, You have to be a stocksman. You have to be a veterinarian. You can't, what do you mean? It's all very nice that you're a Talmud Chacham. Where'd you go to veterinarian school? You know, MRSVC. I mean, where did Rav get that degree? You know, so maybe that's why. No, because actually, Rav said when I was young, before all of this, I spent 18 months in veterinarian school in order to be able to learn all of the dinim of Bechor. So if anything, Dafka Rav was a tremendous baki in this, and he says, Shmonasar Chodashim Gadati Yetzorei Behema. I was living out there in the field for 18 months in all of the muck, and I needed to learn these dinim, and I did. I'm no armchair rabbi over here. So that can't be the reason. And the reason I did that was Leda Izimum Kavua Veizimum Over. So why in the world wouldn't Rebbe give, I mean, the one person should have been given the rights to Yatir Bechoros was Rebbe. The reason that Rebbe didn't want to give him Yatir Bechoros is because Rebbe was concerned that after Rabbi Bar Bar Chana went to Bavel, people were not, they didn't know that he was this tremendous Talmud Chacham. And when Rav would come to Bavel, they would basically just ignore Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, not give him the appropriate covenant, and their whole focus would be, oh, this great Talmud Chacham has come from Eretz Yisrael, Rav, and he wouldn't have any special place for himself. So because of that, L'chalok lo kavod Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, he wanted people to realize what a gem they have in their midst, and they should be mechabed Rabbi Bar Bar Chana. So he wanted to make that distinction between Rav and Rabbi Bar Bar Chana. Or, you know what? Sometimes the worst people to put into a position of paskening halacha is the experts, because they know too much. And if you know too much, then you use your expertise in ways that nobody understands what the heck you just did. And so they learn the wrong things from it. Rav was so incredibly sensitive to being able to distinguish between a permanent mum and a mum over that he would say that a particular thing, this is a mum and you can check the bechor. Other people were not sensitive to the subtleties to that extent. And they would say, oh, Rav said this was okay. And they see something which to them looks okay. And if they would have had another couple of years of experience, they would have known that it's not okay. And therefore, we don't want him to be going around making these piskei halachas because they're simply too expert. So mishum ha-gufa, it's exactly why we don't want him to pasken, because of the fact that he's so expert. The Rav Bekia B'mumei Tvei, he was so extraordinarily aware of the delicate differences between subtle mumim. He would be matir a mum that nobody else would say, whoa, that's considered to be a mum kavua? And they wouldn't even know on what basis he was being matir it. And because of that, they would say, well, ki hai gavna shara Rav. Rav said that was okay. Va'atu l'mishrei mum over. Because of that, they would end up being matir something that wasn't really a mum kavua, and therefore you weren't allowed to shech the bechor. So because of that, Rebbe did not want to give Rav that rishus. And we're going to see that one of the fundamental issues of the rishus is the ability of the individual that you give it to, not to know the din, anybody can know the din, but to be able to teach the din and to apply it in a way that's not going to cause people to have confusions. The closest things that we have to this type of situation is in terms of Dam Nidais Bizman HaZeh, where over there, if you really are a Baki, then you actually learn over the course of years to be able to distinguish colors that other people literally don't see. You can try to show them, look, this is called Dam that's Tame, this is called Dam that's Tar, and like case in the Gemara where one of the Tanaim says, well, people like me who don't see any difference between those two should not have anything to do with this halacha. So this is a question of expertise over a long period of time, which provides an individual actual abilities to see things other people can't see. It's like studying painting and so on. So you can become very, very sensitive to different ways of mixing colors and so on. So I don't understand, like, the whole thing. If Rebbe said, look, you know, Rabbi Bar Chana, Rav, they can go ahead and they can be done. So what's the point of asking Yore? I don't understand. Everybody knows about a treif chicken, don't they? I mean, like, why am I asking permission to be Yore? I understand that where we were dealing with these monetary issues, and over there the authorization was important because of the fact that, you know, you wouldn't have to pay and so on and so forth, even in something that had to do with monetary issues. I mean, once you have that, so then you're already a judge. As far as asking the judge whether the chicken is kosher, I mean, why do I have to ask Rebbe for special authorization for kosher chickens? I mean, Igomer, does he know about kosher chickens? I mean, I sure hope so. You know, I mean, he's not a teenager, is he? So if that's the case, why does he need Rishus? Rishus or Lama Lama Mishka? I mean, he is already a Dayan. I'll tell you why. You think that smicha has something to do with knowing the dinim of kosher chickens? Nothing to do with it at all. It has to do with knowing how to talk. And we're calling this smicha. This is not really smicha, obviously. This is reshusa, which we give the word smicha to, which is very confusing to people. It has nothing to do with smicha. But anyway, but this reshusa of yore yore, you know why we instituted it? Because Yeshiva Bochum don't know how to talk. That's why. And because the Tanya, Pa'amachat alach Rebbe l'mokam echad. Rebbe was on a trip, and he sees people, you cannot believe it, he sees people that they were megablim yisoteim betuma. He sees people that they're making bread in Kalim, of Ameo Aretz, which were Tamei, and like, they're not even concerned with taking off their challah in Tyra. So he said to them, what the heck? How are you doing that? So, look, obviously you can't yell at someone for not keeping the name of Tumah v'Taira. I mean, so either the story was because Rebbe himself, they knew that he was Makbid, or because he knew that these people were actually Chaverim. So he's asking them, how could you do that? So they said to him, oh, that's because a certain Yeshiva guy came here and he told us, Talmid Echad Bolakan, and he taught us that Meibitzaim ein Makshirim. Now, Meibitzaim means that water that comes from a swamp, so it's like swampy water, it's muddy water, and that is not Makshir. So we're very careful only to use swamp water, and that way we don't have to worry about Tumah, because nothing is Mukshir Lekabel Tumah. Now, there's no such halakha. It's absolutely ridiculous. And what it was that Talmud had told them was egg water, may beitzim. You know, but the way these guys talk, you know, with the semi-Yiddish accent, you know, my beitzim, you know, okay, so you're beitzim. So they think it means swamp water. So because of that, here for years, they've been being metame, the Yisad, disaster, because he told them egg whites, and they thought that he was telling them swamp water. So he realized that, of course, for who made beitzim tashlu, he was telling them using egg whites. If you use egg whites to make your challah and there's no water, then it's not going to be mekabel tumah because it's not mukshir lekabel tumah. Fine. So they thought that he was saying maybe tsa'im, which made sense to them. It wasn't as if these are crazy people. They, why if it's swamp water? You know why? Because remember the Mishnah in Masechet Parah that we learned together, that the Mei Karamion and the Mei Figa are pasul for the Parah, mipnei she'hem mei tsa'im. Now, over there, it really was, and the way that we understood it over there, remember, Mefarshim explained, these are real rivers, these two rivers, the Karamion River and the Figa River. The problem is, as Tosfos explains over there, that it used to run between these, agamim. So there was a lot of swamp water. Others learned that it was dirty water. It was very muddy. Whatever the point is, it wasn't kosher for chatas. And there's machlokas and why it's not kosher for chatas. Is it not kosher for chatas? Because it's not called mayim chayim. And mayim chayim is supposed to be dafka water that is pure as it is naturally. We're going to be talking about some of these sugyas and mikvos actually later, maybe even today. And they thought, they put two and two together. Said, look, well, the Mishnah says that maybe tsa'im weren't kosher for Pura. And this Bocher says, you know, Mebitzaim aren't Machshir. So it made sense that they heard Mebitzaim like this. They would have said, Mebitzaim, what are you talking about? And he would have clarified it. But because they had that Mishnah in Pura, they put two and two together, and they figured the Inu Sovra Middle Gabi Chatas Psile, that if the Mishnah takes for granted that Mebitzaim are possible for the Chatas, then that's what the boy is telling them. Makshiri namilo makshiri. It won't be makshiri either. And that's not true. In the case of the chatas, the issue is that you need mayim chayim. And that's not called mayim chayim. So there's a machlokas over here. I just want to tell you. Machlokas was shown him about whether the issue is mayim chayim el keli or mayim chayim. The difference is, if the pagam is in terms of mayim chayim, it's because the pure state of water is where it isn't mixed with impurities. So pure water, mayim chayim, would actually mean pure water. And the other approach, mayim chayim el keli, is that since you need to put the water directly into a kli, if there's any impurities in the water that actually muddy it up, so then you do not have a direct contact between the molecules of all the water and the sides of the kli. Because the whole idea that a liquid is all considered to be one thing is because there's no interposition of other molecules in between. So the liquid actually is constantly transferring one molecule and so on and so forth until the whole thing is in the kli. And that's the point of a liquid. So it's like one solid thing. But if you've got all of this garbage in the water, then you can't say that. And therefore the problem is it's not mayim chayim el keli. Okay, that's a machlokas we show him. But the question whether we would be gores over here like Rashi is mayim chayim el keli or just mayim chayim. But the point is, it has nothing to do with hechsher. Hechsher, making something ro'oy lekabel tuma, that is, makes no difference whether it's water from a swamp or not. And therefore, only lenient chat has been in mayim chayim. Ochak shure, when it's talking about being machsher lekabel tuma, anything is machsher lekabel tuma, any type of water. So because of that, Tana, Botasha, Argazu, that's when they made this so-called phony smicha thing. Botasha, Argazu, that a Talmud does not have permission to even paskin a chicken if he doesn't know how to communicate. And because of that, Talmid al-Yorelim keno tel rishut mirabo. His Rebbe has to know that he is able to communicate clearly and not to cause this kind of mess up. That's a completely different point. But you can see how the sugya on the daf, which is nogea making mistakes and nogea immunity from mistakes and the question of the level of expertise and where it is that we want to get involved in some type of control of what's going on, the chashash that maybe you'll have yoshvei kronos and so on and so forth. All of these concerns are part and parcel of the way in which we ended up being koveya, what type of dinim we're going to keep control over to make sure that it doesn't get out of any real expertise and ability to clarify. So that's when that Izera took place. Now, Tanchum, Bereid Reb Ami, came to this place called Chatar. Now, this is another issue. He went ahead and he told them, you're allowed to put chitim into water. That's called litut. So what they would do is right before they would grind the flour, wash it off with water, which took out a lot of the solid from the flour, and it made it easier to grind. So you're allowed to do that even on Pesach. Why? We, of course, don't do this on Pesach, but then they allowed it to on Pesach because the people were makpid to grind it immediately. And as long as you immediately work on it, then it's not going to turn into chometz. So they said to this Tanchum, Bereid Reb Ami, look, irregardless of whether this is the din or not, how did you have the right to say this din? Doesn't Reb Mani from Tzur, he actually is the Rav around here, and there's a braita that says, Talmid al yore halacha b'makom rabo. It's a whole different issue. Forget about whether you got rishus from your rav or not. There's another din that has to do with the kavod of the rav, that if you are in the same place where the rav is, unless you're literally shalosh parsaot away, so shalosh parsaot, about 12 kilometers away, if you're not that far away, which was the size of Machane Yisro in the Midbar, You can't say anything. Now, this papashtas, this means, in other words, it's a further restriction. Even if you had rishus from the Rav, that rishus does not obtain if the Rav is in the area. Because that's a simple question of kavodat Torah, not of control of making sure that we have the right people issuing piskei halachas. So who gave you the right to open up your mouth in this city? He said to them, I'm sorry, my gosh, lavadatoy, I didn't realize that my Rebbe lived around here, and I never would have done that. Now, the truth is, it's very interesting that it's a big machlokas halacha lemaisa about, does this apply even if you got rishus? Or is this Gemara adding another layer that the rishus is all very nice, but not in the makom of Rabbi? So according to the Rashba, if you went ahead and got rishus from any of those who are living within the 3 kilometer, 12 kilometer area, the Shalosh Parsos, and they all gave you rishus, so then as long as you have no one that you're going to be trampling over, then there's not a problem. As long as there's no one within the Shalosh Parsos, you actually obviously only need one rishus. You don't need rishus from more than one person. But according to this shita, if you have rishus from everybody in this area, then even if they are the Rav, you're allowed to, because that's included in the rishus. So they said, that's a big machlokas, which is often nogea. Rabbi Chia was another maisa, and this is also a further indication of what the rules are when there's a Rav around. Rabbi Chia saw a person who was standing in a Beit HaKvarot, and he was shocked because he knew that that guy was from a family of Kohanim. So he said to that person, wait a second, Lav ben ish bloni kohinata? Aren't you so-and-so's son who is a Kohen? And that guy said to Rabbi Chia, yes, I am. However, unfortunately, my father was a stuck-up, whatever, and Avuadaru Gavra Gvai Naim Ave, and he was so stuck-up that his stuck-up eyes focused on this girl that he fell in love with, who was a Grusha. She was a Sura for a Kohen. He went ahead and married that Grusha, and he screwed up my life by making me a Chalal. So basically, I'm not a Kohen anymore. That's the tragedy of my life. Natani Navdi Grusha V'chilolo. So basically, we bring this over here in order to teach the halacha that when it comes to Afrushe Mi'isura, which is one of the issues that we had raised in the introduction to Sanhedrin, that if you're in a position of preventing somebody to do Isser, for that, you don't need Rishus. Because there's, as the Pasuk says, there's no, in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's covet, there's no other covet that we have to talk about. Now, there's another question. When you're giving this rishus that we call smicha, can you make it basically only partial? You know, I only give you rishus to paskin trefa chickens, you know, but not to do anything else. Is that okay? So, obviously, it is, because we just had that. We just had Rebbe, who said, no, you can't paskin dinei bechoras. So that means it's possible to define what areas you're authorized to paskin in. So, pshita. Lepalga, well, we just had the Gemara. Hakama Devahani, you just said that that's okay. But what about making a condition? In other words, suppose you put into the smicha, you can paskin halachas until such time as somebody intelligent moves to town. That's often a condition in a smicha. Like, so it will say, yore, yore, at shabo more, which is a sneaky way, which sounds like, yeah, until Mashiach comes, but what it really means is, until there's somebody who really knows dinim, then you better shut up. But anyway, you find all these kind of interesting conditions, you know. So are those conditions meaningful? Tashma. Rabbi Yochanan said to Rabbi Shaman, also this was when he was going to Bavel, and he said, Hareata Brishutinu, you can carry along our authorization until you come back here. Achetavo etzlenu. So in other words, I'm ready to give you a smicha only until you come back to Eretz Yisrael. So you see, you can make it tonight. Now, going back to what Shmuel said, Gufa, Omar Shmuel, Shnayim Shadonu Dineyam Din, El Shanikra Beit Din Chatzuf. Now, this was, we saw already that there's obviously different approaches about this, right? Now, I mean, the fundamental difference is whether, is it really a deraisa that you have to have three? And that was based on Iruv Parshiot, is Kosuf Khan. So then we know that the Torah compares Hoda'ot V'Halva'ot to Yezevot V'Chavalot. So then we would never say that if you went against the Torah, Dineyam Din, unless, of course, there would have been a Takanat Rabbanan to make Dineyam Din. Okay, but the Pashtus, it would be dependent on that. If you hold that the whole halacha of requiring three was only in order to avoid Yoshvei Kranot, so we already saw, if somebody's an expert, so then that doesn't apply. And according to Shmuel, if you've got two people who went ahead and they didn't stick to the din that, well, we want to make sure that you've got three people, because we don't know that you have somebody that's a baki. And as Tosis points out, even if one person, because the Etzem, we don't have any marker to say that you need three people other than the fact that we wanted to make sure one of them is a baki. So I say, listen, I happen to know I'm a baki, you know. So I went in and done. You chutzpah, Niak. There was a takona, you're supposed to need three, you know. Okay, but look, if you did it already, fine. The din stands. So, when Shmuel says two people, it doesn't mean only two people, says Tosfos. Basically, you can rely on the Betzedek Tishpot Amitecha after the fact. So, B'riyavad, if you did it, you did it. You shouldn't have done it, but if you did it, you did it. So, Ela Shenikra based the Chutzuf. We call them a bunch of Chutzbanyaks. Now, Reb Nachman was saying this over, and Rava asked him from a mission that we have later on. So it says over there, if you have three dayanim and you end up without a unanimous psak, and the worst part was you couldn't get everybody's opinion. So suppose you've got two people saying, look, he's definitely chayev, or two people saying he's definitely potter. But the third guy says, well, I don't know. So if he says, I don't know, then you do not have a psak of dayanim. What you need to do in that case is you need to bring in more dayanim. And if that's the case, then that seems to show that Shmuel is wrong. Because if Shmuel was right, and you have two people that are saying definitely you're chayev, so why can't those two people be the best then? Because Shmuel says, look, it's after the fact. Okay, so this is after the fact. You weren't able to put together three people, so you got two people. So what's the big deal? According to Shmuel, it should be a binding psak. Nah, come on. That's different. Because over there, Shiny Hata, when you sat down in that court, you created a court of three. If that court is not functional, you're not going to say, well, okay, we still have two out of the three. That's ridiculous. You don't have the court that you convened. Marsh Enkin, Shmuel was talking about we have one or two people that were Mila Chathila. They were Koveya, that they're the ones that are going to be paskening. That's a whole different situation. Wow. Okay, so we're deep, deep into all of the questions over here of the various approaches to the number of Dayanim, all of which is in the context of Hoda'ot V'Halva'ot. It's all a continuation from that beginning in which we were able to distinguish between Hoda'ot V'Halva'ot on the one hand that are not the same as Gizelot V'Chavalot. And remember, we go back to that original question. Why are they not the same? Are they not the same because even though there's Iruv Parshios over here, we needed to make a takana that it would be easy for cash to flow freely? Or are they not the same because we don't have Iruv Parshiot? Or because we have a pasuk of Betzedek Tishpot Amitecha, which is not the reference to the Elohim, and it's a whole different thing. It's a shofet as opposed to an Elohim, and therefore, if it wasn't talking about Hoda'ot V'Halva'ot, so then it would be okay to have Betzedek, maybe even a Chatchila, except that we made a takon about Yoshvei Koronais. You have to keep all of those original elements in mind to be able to get a better sense of how the different shitas over here are allowing or disallowing any kind of variances between the normal Shlosha Dayanim and two Dayanim, one Dayan, or a partial psak of a Bezdin, and so on. Plus today, we also had the wonderful elements of the Rishus, what Netinat Rishus does, what the din is of the immunity that's granted to a Dayan. And the truth is, we had already seen before that there are places where a Dayan should have immunity, and we took the immunity away because of the fact that we had either that it would impede people's willingness to lend money, because we want them to be able to recoup any kind of losses that are caused by a court and allow them to appeal. And that way they'd be able to get their money back. And another possibility would be we want them to be able to make sure that they have a reliable court. And so because of that, we insisted that the people learn in Washington Square if they're going to be doing the 5 cents the Dayan is in shtick. So this was all part of Charlie Brown. Moving on to Reb Daniel for a moment. Yes, Reb Daniel.
Rebbe, it would be interesting to think about the relationship between Hoda'ot and Yehuda, Shevoda, and his function as a mechokek and...
Yes, indeed. Interesting. Yes, indeed. Okay, beautiful, lovely.